From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. This weekend, Doors Open Baltimore offers a chance to go inside and explore buildings throughout the city, including many that aren't usually open to the public. From churches and galleries to some of the oldest homes in Baltimore, architect Victoria Crowshar-Planthold describes what's to be seen.
No matter what your interest in modernism and the international style, we have Mies van der Rohe buildings, historic buildings, buildings that have been reimagined into new spaces. I mean, every sort of architecture you want to see we have in Baltimore on this event.
Then Edgar Allan Poe died 160 years ago this weekend. We speak to Enrica Jang, head of Poe Baltimore, about festivities planned to remember Baltimore's beloved suspense writer. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Ever wondered what's inside the buildings you walk by every day? Ever wanted to take a peek inside? Whether it's a historic building that's been turned into offices, an inconspicuous gallery, or a building that shapes Baltimore's skyline, this weekend is your chance. This Saturday and Sunday, Doors Open Baltimore has arranged dozens of open houses and guided tours at sites across the city. The events are free and organized by the American Institute of Architects, AIA, Baltimore chapter, and the Baltimore Architecture Foundation. More than 60 sites are participating. They range from well-known spots like the Baltimore Museum of Industry and the Walters Art Museum to places off the beaten path, such as the Robert Long House, the oldest surviving colonial urban residence, and Greenmount West Community Center, originally a public school constructed in the 1890s. Joining me to talk about the event and some of the must-see sites are Doors Open Baltimore Committee Chair and Architect Victoria Crowshar-Planthold. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And David Dittman, a committee member and a member of the Baltimore Architecture Foundation's Board of Directors. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is the fifth year of Doors Open Baltimore. Victoria, what is your mission?
Our mission is just to give the public access to spaces they've passed by every single day in the city and don't usually get to see. I think everyone has a natural curiosity about the beautiful buildings, but they never have the opportunity to actually go through the doors and see what's behind them. And oftentimes, the spaces that lie within are even more amazing than what you think from the exterior.
How did the idea get started?
Our founder, Chelsea Thomas, used to live in Denver, where they do a Doors Open program throughout that city. And when she came to Baltimore, she thought she should bring the event with her. So that's how we got started 5 years ago. And every year since, it has just grown and grown. We have over 65 buildings open this year.
And how many people tend to come? And how has that changed?
It has grown exponentially. I think our first year was about 500 people, and last year was around 5,000.
Literally. And do people tend to go to just a couple of sites, or do they tend to go to the whole, a big part of the 64 sites?
I think visitors try to be very ambitious. I think the most I've heard a visitor go to is 8 to 10 sites in one day. But we want people to enjoy the site. So if you get to one or two, that's fine too. For the first time this year, some of the sites are actually also open on Sunday. So if you don't get to everyone you want to see on Saturday, you can also go that next day.
So this is the first year it's been a two-day thing.
Yes.
Who participates in Doors Open? Does it tend to be people in the architectural field?
Well, on one side, the folks that are volunteering tend to be architects, architecture students. I'm a retired public school social studies teacher, so it's all over the place. And people that visit tend to be curious Baltimoreans, county residents. We've tracked people from all around this state and actually out of state as visitors. And I know of one Virginia architect who has made the point of bringing her family every year.
How do you select the sites?
Well, in our committee, we talk about interesting buildings we have seen through the city that we're curious about. And actually, as our event has become more popular, some sites have started to reach out to us. So we just put out invitations in the spring to anyone we think would be an interesting site for the public to see. And a lot of them say yes and are able to participate.
You said that some sites reach out to you now, but mm-hmm. especially when you started, was it sort of a sales job to get a site to say, open your doors and let everybody in?
It has been, especially the first year. Chelsea brought the idea, as Victoria said, back from Denver, but they had about 6 months to put the whole event together and raise our first budget, which was about $2,500. And it was a lot of pleading and begging and sharing with the building owners the benefits of opening the doors. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of buy-in. We had 50 sites that first year, mm-hmm. and they put that together in about 6 months.
And who gives the tours?
We provide volunteers at every site to direct people, but they don't know a whole lot of information. Most of the information is in the brochure that's available at our various information hubs and online. The buildings, the sites, it's kind of, well, they choose. I've been to sites where there's nobody available, just the doors are open and there's a couple signs. We've been to sites where they have put out food, and they're very popular, by the way. So it's varying levels of participation. For all the information can be found in the brochure, and also Baltimore Heritage website has information on most of the sites.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with David Dittman and Victoria Crashar-Plantholt, some of the organizers of Doors Open Baltimore. This weekend, dozens of cultural sites and historic buildings across the city will be open to visitors at no charge. David, tell me a few of the places you'd recommend taking advantage of this weekend.
You know, that's a fun question, and it's always difficult because there are so many. But among the ones I would definitely recommend would be the Amerinthine Museum, a just incredible collection of art, wall-to-wall, very little space. It's in Woodbury. It's collected by one person, Les Harris, over the years. It's actually moved from its original location.
And the name again is?
The Amerinthine Museum, and it's in Woodbury. Certainly, if you're a native of Baltimore or newly arrived, you may have seen the colorful fruit and vegetable wagons that ply the street, pulled
sure.
by horses. We call them A-Rabbers here in Baltimore, and there is an A-Rabber Preservation Society on North Fremont Avenue, and they will be open. I've been there several times, and I can't get enough of it. There are on South Wolf Street in Fells Point two structures that are probably among the oldest, if not the oldest, buildings in the entire city. They're known as the Caulkers Houses. They're old wooden structures that house ship workers back in the 18th century. If you stand back from the buildings, you see that the roofs are sagging, and in fact, you'd wonder how they're still standing. But they will be open. They are very interesting. And it's a vestige of Baltimore's maritime past and present.
Victoria, what would you add?
Well, to that, I would add the most worshipful Prince Hall Grand Lodge. Beyond its interesting name, it was built in 1892 as a synagogue. But in the 1960s, that group moved away from the building, and it is now a Masonic lodge that you can take tours of. And then on Sunday, some of our guided tours, the Morgan State campus is open for guided tours around the oldest buildings of that campus. It's considered a national treasure by the National Historic Preservation Trust. And on Saturday, we also have a kids' architecture workshop on Saturday at the Baltimore Museum of Industry for kids ages 8 to 13 to learn about design and the career of architecture.
Are there any other sites with family-friendly activities?
Yes. This year on our website, doorsopenbaltimore.org, you can actually navigate the sites by selecting if you want a family-friendly activity. So the Baltimore Underground Science Space actually has a story time and child-friendly experiments and presentations going on throughout that day. The Greenmount West Community Center is also doing some presentations and child-friendly events. So it's a great activity for families to come out. There's buildings throughout the city that have specifically kid-friendly things to do.
I'd add the Baltimore Society of Model Engineers on West Saratoga Street. Mm-hmm. If you like model trains, this organization has been around since 1932, and the third floor of their building is a model train layout in various scales and gauges, and the kids will love it.
Mm-hmm. And our guidebook that you can pick up at any site includes a scavenger hunt, too, for children. So no matter where you go, you can have a child-friendly event.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about this very nice guidebook that literally fits in the palm of your hand. You can pick up a copy this weekend at any of the 64 sites.
That's correct.
Right? But where else, if you want to sort of plan ahead?
If you want to plan ahead, on our website, doorsopenbaltimore.org, you can download a copy of that guidebook so you can check out the sites and plan your itinerary beforehand. Otherwise, just show up to any of our open house sites Saturday starting at 10 a.m., and you can pick up a guidebook and begin your journey from there.
And the brochure, the guidebook, is available also at the Maryland Historical Society
this
weekend?
Yes, it is. And I think I should add that it's all free. Mm-hmm. This is an entirely free tour. Nobody has to spend a penny.
But you can basically start anywhere.
Anywhere, yes. And there's no way you can see all the buildings. So it's fun to go online, look at what's available, and there are a number of different categories so you can filter out your search.
64 sites, there must be a huge range of architecture that people can learn something about this weekend.
Yes, we're very lucky to have some of the oldest buildings in Baltimore dating from the 18th century all the way up to current construction sites of buildings forthcoming. So no matter what your interest in modernism and the international style, we have Mies van der Rohe buildings, historic buildings, buildings that have been reimagined into new spaces. Every sort of architecture you want to see, we have in Baltimore on this event.
What do you think people learn about architecture with all this?
Well, one of the takeaways is what architects do. Do they just design buildings? No, architects are problem solvers. They create spaces, interior and exterior spaces, to solve problems, to in practical ways and in pleasing artistic ways that we can walk by one of these buildings. You can see one building and say, what is it? It's a storage container. Or you can look at a building like, say, 10 Light Street, which is a glorious Art Deco, Art Moderne structure from the late 20s. The embellishments, the way it rises up to the sky, it suggests a small Empire State Building. So I think that a big takeaway is an appreciation of architecture or the built environment, the importance of it, and not just something you walk by every day.
What do you hope people walk away with after visiting some of these sites?
I hope people discover something about Baltimore that they never knew. I have been working with Doors Open Baltimore for 4 years now, and I've lived in this area my entire life, and I'm still discovering things through this event. So I just want people to have an interesting story to tell on Monday when they go to work and saying, did you know that such and such was in Baltimore City? Because I lived here and I never knew that was there.
Well, I'm grateful to you both for telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you for having
Thank you.
Us.
Victoria Crashar Plantholt is the AIA's Doors Open Baltimore Committee Chair, and David Dittman is a committee member and a member of the Baltimore Architecture Foundation's Board of Directors. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to the Doors Open sites and to registration information for guided tours. Quick break now. When we come back, legendary writer Edgar Allan Poe died on October 7th, 1849. We'll hear how Baltimore plans to remember Poe this weekend. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more." If you're from Baltimore, or revere Gothic poetry, you know this is the opening stanza of Edgar Allan Poe's most famous work, The Raven, published in 1845. This weekend, Baltimore is marking the 169th anniversary of the death of the legendary suspense writer with an international festival. Poe is buried at Westminster Hall and Burying Ground near Lexington Market. Joining me to talk about this festival, as well as Poe's life and career, is Enrica Jang, director of Poe Baltimore, the nonprofit that maintains and interprets the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much.
Poe was born in Boston and raised in Virginia, but Baltimore held a special place in his heart. What was his connection to the city?
Poe's father's family had settled in Baltimore, and he sought refuge here when he broke with his foster family. So he lived in a small house on Amity Street with his aunt, his grandmother, his cousin Virginia, who would later become his wife, and his cousin Henry. And he began his professional career here in Baltimore.
Why do you think Baltimoreans have such affection for Poe?
Well, he lives here now. He's buried here. I think that the persona he took on in his writing lends a sort of mysterious and spooky air, and so that is alluring. And the mystery of his death here in Baltimore is just an enduring mystery. And the primal subjects that he wrote about, love, death, horror, pain, all of those things just lend themselves to just this beloved figure.
How did Poe's former home come to be preserved as an historical landmark?
The Edgar Allan Poe House is the oldest surviving Poe home on the East Coast. Poe actually did live in a number of different cities up and down the East Coast. He was following the work. But Poe House has a distinct honor of being the place where he began his professional career and where he began his family. The house was a rental property when Poe and his family were living there. It was paid for by his grandmother's. She was receiving a stipend for her husband's service in the Revolutionary War. But then when she passed away, the family had to leave the home. The house was known to be Poe's over the decades and the century. And then in 1938, it was actually scheduled to be swept away entirely to make room for the Poe Homes, one of the oldest housing projects in the country. It was the Edgar Allan Poe Society that stepped in and saved the house. And it was originally a duplex. They authenticated which side of the house Poe and his family lived in, and then the other half of the house was ripped off and the Poe Homes built onto Poe House. It was established as a full-time museum in 1949, and then in 1972, it was protected as a National Historic Landmark. But it's been a museum since 1949. It's been run by the Poe Society. It's been run by the City of Baltimore. It faced closure in 2012, and that's how Poe Baltimore was formed. We are a nonprofit organization that takes care of the house now, and we run it as a museum for visitors from all over the world to come and connect with Poe.
And what can people see when they come to Poe's house?
We have a small collection of his possessions, a traveling writing desk, which is exciting for anybody who wants to come visit Poe House, a chair, and a telescope that Poe owned. The house is, I would say, around 80% original. You can walk the floors and touch the walls where Poe lived and just connect with a very humble home that was the place of a great beginning.
So you're really in the same space he was when you're there?
Yes. Yes. You get chills when you walk in and you realize that so many wonderful and great things began in such a humble place.
Many people read The Raven, The Cask of Amontillado, and other works in school. What are some of the not as well-known Poe works that you'd recommend?
One of my favorites is Berenice. It's the story of a man who marries his cousin, but when his wife falls ill and begins to die, he becomes obsessed with her teeth. And once she dies, he rips the teeth out of her head. So it's this very gruesome story that's so striking that not a lot of people talk about. They always talk about my favorites, of course, Telltale Heart and Cask of Amontillado, but that's definitely one.
Is there another one? Not quite as shocking, perhaps?
Well, Morella is a story of, it's a almost a ghost story, but a story of possession. It's the story of a young lady who is possessed by the ghost of her dead mother, and that's a wonderful story as well. Roger Corman did an adaptation of Morella, and that's a story that doesn't get mentioned very often. And I think one more is Manuscript in a Bottle. It's the story that Poe won short story writing here in Baltimore, launched his career, and that is a very important story to Poe's history, and it's not something that gets mentioned very often.
That's Enrica Jang, director of Poe Baltimore, the nonprofit that maintains the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum. Poe Baltimore is hosting the first International Edgar Allan Poe Festival and Awards this weekend. The mysterious Poe toaster used to show up at Poe's grave on his birthday, January 19th, to pay tribute, but it seems appropriate to me to build a festival around his death date, Poe's death date, October 7th. Tell us some of the activities being offered.
We're very excited to welcome a number of different organizations from outside of Baltimore to come to Baltimore and host them here. There's a wonderful museum in Richmond, Virginia, called the Poe Museum. They're going to be coming up, and they're going to deliver a coffin-making workshop, teaching people about burial practices and how to make coffins. There is a Poe cottage in New York City. It's run by the Bronx Historical Society, and they are going to be coming down to talk about Poe's life in New York City. We are thrilled to welcome the United States Military Academy at West Point. A lot of people don't know that Poe served in the United States military. He was a cadet at West Point. He was court-martialed, but they like him now. So they're going to come in down and talk about his military life and some anecdotes of Poe as a young man.
You're going to also reenact the funeral?
We are. Jericho Vinegar Works and Thomas Brown Woodwright here in Baltimore and a number of other artists have put together a beautiful reenactment of Poe's funeral, Poe's first funeral. He was actually buried twice, and that's a story as well. They're reenacting his funeral and are going to do a viewing and candlelight vigil at the Carroll Mansion, October 6th and 7th. So that is part of our bus tour. Unfortunately, tickets have sold out for that, but tickets are available to see that exhibit at Carroll Mansion.
And there's going to be an interpreter of Poe?
There is. Tim Beasley is an Edgar Allan Poe performer, and he will be our master of ceremonies. He's going to be coming in. And we have a gentleman coming in from Galveston, Texas, and he goes by the moniker The Undead Edgar, and he will perform as a, not a zombie Edgar, but it's definitely a very gothic performance inside Poe House. So that's an opportunity as well.
And what is the awards part of the International Festival and Awards?
Poe Baltimore, we are a nonprofit organization that maintains Edgar Allan Poe House, interprets the house, but we also do Poe programming throughout the city, teaching people about Poe's legacy in the arts. We are unveiling a new honor called the Saturday Visitor Awards, so named after the newspaper that it was the first money that an Edgar Allan Poe received for his writing and, again, launched his professional career. He met the editors where he became eventually became a columnist, a magazine man, and editor. It started his career. So that prize was very important, and he won that prize when he was living at Poe House. So the Saturday Visitor Awards will recognize a new generation of artists and writers who draw direct inspiration from Poe's life and works. There will be two categories. The first is adaptations of Poe's life and works, and this is not restrictive of genre, so performances, art, poetry, music, anything that is a direct adaptation of Poe's life or works. That is one category. And the second category is original works inspired by Poe. The awards seek to recognize a new generation of artists and writers.
And at this first festival, are you announcing these awards or will you actually be bestowing awards?
We are announcing the honor. We are forming the committee now, and then the submissions and nominations process will begin on his birthday in January 2019.
I appreciate you telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Enrica Jang is director of Poe Baltimore, the nonprofit that maintains the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum. Poe Baltimore is hosting the first International Edgar Allan Poe Festival and Awards this weekend. We have links to the museum and the festival at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast, On the Record. Thanks for listening. Hope you join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.